Oh, it's brilliant. It's interesting when you do something so in such an immersed way as Judy and I did on, well, this morning, and then Richard and Judy on Channel 4. You know it's going to come to an end at some point. You know, either they'll get tired of you, or you'll get tired of it, or a bit of both. And you wonder what it'll be like. You wonder, you know, will you get through the day without sort of that adrenaline surge of going live and the red lights and all that stuff? And you know what? It's absolutely fabulous. And I wish we'd stopped earlier. Not that either of us regret any of the years that we spent doing what we did together on telly. But honestly, it's just so nice having a life, and you realise that doing a big, you know, 5-day-a-week program, whether it's in the morning or the evening, is it sucks a huge amount of your life away from you.
You see, that's really interesting because work gives me structure, and I'm 38 now, and I'd be terrified if work fell away from me, because I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, I would have been the same at your age at 38. I would have felt exactly, and I did feel exactly the same. But I'm 55 now, and you do slow down, and also you develop sort of other appetites. I mean, I was very ambitious as a young man, probably too ambitious for my own good, and that slowly fades, and you become hopefully satisfied with the career that you've had. But what I found is, I mean, Judy and I we've now become very different kinds of people. She's a full-time writer. She's a novelist. She's got a 2-book deal. Of all the TV presenters that I know, Judy is probably the least likely in terms of her personality. She kind of hates being well known. She doesn't like being recognised. And she's as happy as a bug in a rug now, just sitting at home on her laptop writing away.
And what about you, Richard? Do you like being well known?
It's been a solid state for so long. I can scarcely look at it as a concept. It's just sort of, I mean, I got into local television in 1978, you know, border television in Cumbria. And it certainly in those days, if you were a local news presenter and reporter, you were actually very intensely known in your region, you know, just as well known as a national sort of celebrity. So, and that was when I was, what, 22, 23. So I've been aware that people, whether they like me or hate me, and I know I'm very sort of Marmite figure, I've been aware that people recognise me in the street for yonks. So I don't really think about it. It's neither a plus or a minus. It just is.
Why do you think you're a Marmite figure? Have you worked that out in your head?
No, I haven't actually, and I try not to address it too much. I think most people who allow their personalities to come through, either on television or radio, have that effect. I know that there are some people who I completely rub up the wrong way, not that I want to or try to, but I just do, and there are other people who seem to be reasonably fond of me, and you have no control over it. You just have to be yourself, and the person that you are that comes through the speakers or through the television screen is there for people to like or not like, and I think the more that you're yourself, and I've always tried to be more than just, you know, reading the links smoothly or whatever. I've always tried to let the person that I am come through. Then the more the Marmite you're going to be, either one way or the other.
It's interesting what's going on at the minute, Richard, isn't it, with Leveson and celebrities and people who have a public profile fighting to have their private life respected and the press on the back foot.
It is a seminal change, isn't it? Personally, I've always taken the rough with the smooth. I mean, we've been told that my mobile was hacked routinely. I've also been told this is by the Guardian team, who've been kind of running this story and running the
recently
lead.
or
no,
ages
during the period that we're talking about, you know, 90s and into the noughties. My phone was hacked apparently, and also my emails were hacked. And I was also informed by Newsnight about a month ago, and I did a little film for them, that I was actually followed as well by one of these investigators for about 5 or 6 days consecutively back in, I think it was May 2006.
How do you feel about that?
Well, on all these points, fundamentally, I don't care, because I don't have any skeletons in my closet. My life is pretty much an open book, as I was sort of hinting earlier. So I don't think back and think, oh my God, would they have heard the conversation or the email about such and such? Because I don't have any sort of crises in my past. And I looked at the diary, or what passes for my diary, for the week that I was followed. It was a pure fishing expedition. They weren't following me because they suspected I was up to no good, or, you know, going to see prostitutes or God knows what else. It was just that let's follow Richard Madeley for a week and see what we can turn up. It was pure fishing. So, again, even if I'd known at the time, I suppose it would have made me stick to the speed limit and not pick my nose at traffic lights. But it doesn't bother me at the level that I think, oh, my God, what will come out now? And I've never actually opened a newspaper and seen a story in it that's made me think, but, as some celebs have, how did they get that? That's never happened. So on that level, I don't care. But, on the other level, I'm I definitely feel violated and very angry that some jerk should seek to follow me around, and my daughter and my friends and anyone who I was in contact with, covertly photographing and filming us. It's like living in a police state, and it's just wrong.
Are you going to sue?
No, no. I mean, there have been opportunities in the past or moments when either or both of us could have sued for libel. I mean, we have been libeled. I won't repeat the libels because otherwise, what's the point? But we've never done it. I'm very, very, very slow to litigation. It's partly because I've seen it destroy other people's lives, even when they've won cases. I mean, it sucks out everything you've got, including your money. But the other thing is, it means that you're taking yourself very seriously. And actually, I don't.
How long were you at ITV, Richard?
I joined in local television in 1978, and then we went network with This Morning in 1988, and we left for Channel 4 in 2001, so I don't know, what's that about?
13 years on This Morning.
And 13 on This Morning, yeah.
Were you sore when it ended?
No, we walked away from it. I mean, we did 7 years or 6 or 7 years in Liverpool, and it got very Groundhog Day-ish, and we told Granada that we were really thinking of just going freelance and
you
stopping
see,
it.
Why would you do that? Because it's comfortable and it's safe and it's successful.
Yeah, but
why
see,
on
we've
earth
always
walk away from that, Richard?
Because we've discovered as we've sort of gone through life that actually both of us, despite appearances, we are risk takers. You know, like filling in for Chris Evans on Radio 2, I could never have done that. You know, when I was doing a 5 day
I've heard
show.
You on it. You're class on it.
I don't know about that. Again, I
tell you, no, I'm not flattering you just for the sake of it. I like you on it. You're very good, sir.
That's very kind. But again, you get negative reactions as well. You know, there was a piece about it on Feedback on Radio 4 saying, "What's this bloke doing on Radio 2? To get him off." So, you know, you're always going to get that
side. Have you got a thick skin to that?
You have to. And you, as I said at the beginning, you cannot take yourself seriously. Because if you do, you're going to be in this game, you are going to be very unhappy because you're going to read things which are unflattering, which are critical, sometimes justifiably, sometimes not. Mm. You're going to read unpleasant jokes about you, references, untrue allegations, all of that. Mm. And if you carry it around with you, if you pop it in a sack over your back, you'll just get weighed down. You have to rise above it and not care. And within reason, and I'm not talking about libel here, but you have to allow people free comment, you know. I was walking along the cliff path at our place down in Cornwall a few years ago, and just me and another guy walking towards each other, no one else in sight. And you get to read people's expressions if you've, you know, been in the public eye for a while. And I could tell as he came towards me that this was one of those who didn't like me. He just had never met in his life, but just didn't like the bloke off the telly. I could just see it in his face, and I wondered what he'd say. And we passed each other, and as is the code of the country, I said, "Morning." And he didn't answer. He sort of made a seething kind of growl and carried on. I thought, well, okay, each to his own. Got to the village, got my papers and bread and stuff and the knapsack, and I'm walking back over the cliffs about 50 minutes later, and blow me down, he's coming back towards me as well. And now, as he got closer, I read his face, and what it was saying was, I've thought of the thing I wanted to say to this guy, but I didn't get the chance. I couldn't think of it in time, but now I've got the chance. So we drew level, and I stopped, and I nodded and smiled, and said, "Morning." And he said, and I apologise to anyone from the Midlands for this terrible accent, but he said, "I just want to say to you, Mr. Madeley," he said, "that I loathe and despise everything you stand for, and always will," and walked on, which actually made my day. I thought it was the funniest thing, and it had made his day too, and he could go home to his missus and say, "I saw that be Richard Madeley," and I gave him a piece of my mind, and it gave me a story to tell to you. So everyone ends up happy, you know.
You've mentioned a couple of times in this interview, Richard, you've mentioned about libel and untrue allegations, and you were completely cleared, of course, when you made a mistake.
With
your shopping, but did it hurt? Did it hurt that the allegations were out there?
Yeah, I mean, now it's absolutely fine, and I devoted a sort of massive chapter to it in our autobiography 10 years ago. But at the time, it was humiliating. It was really awful. I mean, anyone who's been accused of shoplifting and hasn't intended to do that, you know, has genuinely made a mistake at the checkout, will know what it feels like. I mean, it's awful to be told that you're a thief, you know. And it was very stressful because although, you know, people call it a trivial allegation, although believe me, it's not if it's aimed at you, it could have destroyed my career. And I'd left school at 16. I'd worked like a dog to rise to the top in our local newspaper group. And then I'd joined local radio and worked all the hours God sent. And then I got into telly and I'd really worked hard. And the thought that all of that could disappear with a guilty verdict was horrific.
And
you know?
And they just tapped you in the shoulder.
It was classic. It was the kind of thing which I think happens to most people at some point, whether or not it goes through into a formal charge. Yeah, I was at the checkout. I had a trolley full of shopping, and the section at the front, the separate section at the front, had all the booze in, because if you put it in the main trolley, it crashes everything. So I took everything out and paid for it, except the stuff in the front. Just wasn't focusing on it at all, and then paid the bill and walked out. And then yes, tap on the shoulder. We've reason to think you've left without paying. No, I haven't. Here's the bill. What about that? And I looked at the stuff in the front and thought, well, which is where it always was after I'd paid for it, and thought, what's the, I don't get it. And I looked at the bill again and I realised what had happened, and said, Jesus, I'm so sorry. I'll go back. But I think it was a bit of a tall poppy syndrome. You know, we'd been on this morning for a couple of years, and everybody got very excited, to be honest with you, the staff there, and I understand that, yeah. and the police. And what happened to me was I was offered a caution, exactly like Anthony Worrell Thompson the other day. But unlike him, I told him to stick it, because if you accept a caution, then you're saying, yeah, I intended to do this, and I absolutely didn't. So, yeah, refused the caution, opted for a Crown Court trial, you know, took it very seriously, and yes, as you say, I was acquitted and got my costs and everything and moved on. But it was very stressful and you know, not something I'd want to go through again.
Yeah. Were you frightened in court?
No, it's slightly amusing. As I wrote in the book, you get the... you get the kind of the charge sheet in front of you when you're actually in the dock, you know, and it says Regina versus whoever you are. And I thought, well, I actually quite like the Queen. I don't feel I'm in a battle of wits or wills with her. It was surreal, and probably less stressful the actual court experience for me than perhaps for other people, because I'd been a court reporter. I'd spent many hours on local papers and radio and television covering Crown Court cases and magistrates' hearings and all the rest of it. So the process didn't put me off at all. I was quite confident that it would be all right. You know, I mean, there were some dark nights of the soul when I thought, oh God, what if I get a stupid jury or sort of bonkers judge or something? I'll have to appeal and it'll all go on and on. But most of the time, I knew it was going to be okay, and it was.
And you sound like a confident character, Richard. Of course you are, given what you do. But what was it like getting up in the morning and seeing that in the papers?
Well, it only was in the papers because of you know, contemporaneous reporting. You can't keep going on about someone's who's actually fighting a case. You have to just report the events as they unfold. It was always funny. I mean, for example, this morning in Granada were terribly... I mean, everyone knew me well at Granada. We'd all sort of been working together as researchers and reporters and now more elevated positions. And they were very supportive and said, look, we know this is crap and it'll be fine and everything as normal. So, for example, because I opted to go to a Crown Court, I had to occasionally to go to Magistrates Court to have a remand hearing, which is this procedure. And they were very nice, and they used to put me on straight away at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning. Meanwhile, Judy was opening the show over in Liverpool, and I'd get in the car, and I'd drive from Manchester to Liverpool, hearing on the news on the way a report about my appearance, you know, and I'd get to the studios, and I'd barrel in, and Judy would be in the kitchen or interviewing somebody, and I'd just walk straight on the set by sort of arrangement with the producers to sit down, and she'd say, oh, he's here, how did it go? And I turned to the cameras and say, well, remanded again, obviously no bail, for another couple of months. Looks like we'll get the hearing in June. Anyway, how's the show going? And it was, looking back on it, it was surreal television. I mean, it was extraordinary stuff.
Isn't it interesting how you're able, because you were acquitted and you didn't mean to do it, contrast how you were able to publicly handle that to what Anthony Worrell Thompson's having today?
Well, I don't want to talk about Anthony in detail. I mean, obviously, I make reference to it there because it's quite topical, because I don't know what was going through the poor guy's mind. I can only briefly assume that...
He said he was stressed out of his brain, Richard.
Well, I don't think that a 60-year-old in his position is suddenly going to turn into a life of crime, do you? I mean, it just seems improbable. It seems to me that, yeah, he was under some kind of pressure, and he said that himself. As to how that actually made that happen, I don't know. I you know, it's not my field. But I certainly feel sorry for him.
We've talked a lot, Richard, about what you used to do. Of course, something that has prevailed, it's lasted the test of time, is the book club.
Yeah. The book club is a lovely sort of addendum to our sort of careers, and as you say, it's carried through from the telly days. Yeah, it's great.
Every time I fly back to Northern Ireland, I work three days a week in Salford. I do Five Live on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, and then I go back to Northern Ireland on a Monday morning. And every time I'm going through Manchester Airport, you're staring at me. You and Julie are
I can only apologize.
Staring at me from Manchester Airport with your book club.
Well, I think what's happened is it's twofold. One is that because the club was a success when we were doing particularly Channel 4, it got time to establish itself, and people came to trust it, you know, and you know, we do know what we're doing when we pick the books. You know, we know what makes a good read. We do it in partnership with W. H. Smith.
Do you find yourself, just finally, Richard, do you find yourself getting more philosophical as you get older? I was talking to Richard Pittman, I was talking to a couple of weeks ago, and he's given away one of his kidneys. And I asked him why, and he said, well, I'm getting older and I just can't, I don't need to. And I just wonder, with you say you're what, 55 now?
Yeah, 55, yeah.
What's your outlook in life? Is it changing? Are the things want to do for others now?
I'm definitely more reflective than I was. I consider things more. I try and understand how things work. And you can't blow your own trumpet. But yes, I do try and help people, whether it's strangers or family members or whatever, in whatever way I can. And I think, yes, you're right, that comes with age and with time as well. Again, it comes back to this getting off the hamster wheel of 5 days a week.
So what do you still want to do in life?
I want to learn to fly. I want to get my pilot's wings because I had a couple of lessons for a TV program last year and absolutely loved it. I was up in a tiger moth for a couple of hours and really enjoyed it. So I'd like to do that. I want to relearn to surf. I used to surf when I was a teenager and then work took over and I just didn't. So I want to go back to surf school and do that. I want to get this damn novel finished and published, which hopefully should happen at the early part of next year. Professionally, as I say, I'm freelancing. I'm doing the Radio 2 stuff. There's the book club. But I'm increasingly trying to get into documentaries. I really enjoyed, I did a Who Do You Think You Are last year, which took me back to America. And my roots are, in fact, the very, very first white settlers who formed Boston in the 1630s. And I love that process. And I haven't made a film for a long time. And I love that. And in fact, I'll be making a documentary later this year for one of the networks, a prime time one. And if that works, it'll go to series. So I can't say any more than that at the moment, but that's happening this spring. So documentaries, I think, I'd thoroughly enjoy getting into.
I think it's obvious, Richard, why you've been in the business so long, because you're really, really easy to talk to. it's a pleasure talking to you, sir.
And to you.
And thank you very much, Richard.
Great pleasure.
Thank you.